Ladies and gentlemen, cheeseheads of all ages, we're gathered here today to assess the health of a nation.
I think we're capable of being a really good football team, a really good competitive football team, but it's not just going to happen.
A nation responsible for four Super Bowls.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
29 Hall of Famers.
Sterling Sharp's third touchdown of the game.
And for being one of the most historic franchises in all of professional sports.
I'd like to welcome you all, of course, and tell you how proud we are to have you a part of the Packers. Just as you should be proud to be here to be a part of this team.
Live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All Sports Zone on the grounds of Summerfest, this is the State of the Packers. Alongside Gabe Neitzel and three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde, here's Alex Strofe.
Away we go, 2026, State of the Packers, live from the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone at Summerfest. Fellas, good to be back with you. I feel like I haven't talked to you in, 6 months. The season's been over.
I'm just glad Jason's here on time. I know we had some of those issues during the regular season. So,
oh, wow.
One time
the guy oversleeps.
No, you didn't even oversleep.
I didn't even oversleep. I just forgot that I needed to be there at 10, not 11.
Packers played so little noon games at home.
It's true.
Forgot how the timing and rhythm of the day went. This is always fun.
That's really Summerfest. Is... start the show off.
That was a good start. Yeah. Well, last year was you didn't pay his dad on time.
Oh,
that was last
more
year.
Electrical work that needs to be done. Are your parents coming down to take the show live?
No, they are not. They are not.
Do they have any hiking planned up in the greater Green Bay area?
They can.
Okay. Keith, if you're listening, I'll text you on the way back.
Yeah, you've got the number you need to know.
I do.
This is always a fun show. Love doing it. We've got a beautiful day here at Summerfest. Hope people plan on stopping by or listening as they're driving around.
Yeah, come up and talk while we're talking, too. That's always
that's
your
a
favorite
Summerfest.
Part of this.
That's a Summerfest staple.
Hey, do you know where Ecuador Manta's playing?
That's another great callback.
Just get me to the commercial, and then I'll be happy to help.
It's another
deep cut. Homer was looking for someone's glasses while I was doing my segment with him this week. Have you seen my glasses? Anyway.
Summerfest is the best. For those of you that have not joined us before on State of the Packers, we will go position group by position group, breaking down the 2026 Green Bay Packers. And, of course, we'll end with a season overview. Years past, it's made me very depressed. Last year, I think it was mostly positive.
Well, the 2023 edition, where we tried to temper your expectations, and we turned out to be wrong, and you turned out to be right. And then... I know the 2024 edition, I very clearly remember saying they may have, they may be a better team, but not go as far as they did by winning that playoff game in Dallas the previous year. That turned out to be right, as they lost two games to the Lions, two to the Vikings, and two to the Eagles that season. Last year, we've spent so much time kind of dissecting it since January 10th, but again, I was talking to Matt LaFleur this week for my Madison Magazine story, and I just always, my mind always goes back to Denver, and that when we look ahead now to 2026, I feel like it's kind of the running it back of, I feel really good about this team right now, and if they stay healthy enough, I will continue to feel good about this team, and if they don't, they're in a world of trouble.
That's where I want to start today. Rather than state of the quarterback or state of the defensive line, I want to start with state of the head coach. A fresh new contract extension for Matt LaFleur after five straight losses to end the season, including the blown lead in the wild card round at Chicago. They couldn't finish games. And that's been the big preaching point for Matt LaFleur this offseason, guys. But he is back in Green Bay. A couple new pieces around him, including a new special teams and defensive coordinator.
With 11 new coaches on the staff.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a reinvention project to a point, but Matt LaFleur is still the man in charge. What do you make of what he's talked about so far this offseason and how he can come in maybe rejuvenated in 2026? We'll start with you, Jason.
Yeah, I don't know how you practice finishing. I just don't. You know how you finish? You have really good players on the field at the end of games. And if you don't have Tucker Kraft and you don't have Micah Parsons, you're not as good at finishing games.
Or Zach Tom.
Right. I mean, he left that Denver game too, and people forget that. By the way, partially torn patellar tendon Like, it wasn't like, oh, you got a little tweak, as I did when I fell down the steps at One Wisconsin earlier this week at Sydney's volleyball tournament, which I'm still recovering from.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was
yeah, you weren't walking with a noticeable limp.
Sydney's still hoping that they can provide her the security footage.
That's a good daughter.
So she can see how embarrassing I was.
And but she wants to share it with the rest of us, too, once she gets a hold of it.
If we get our hands on it, I will definitely be happy to share. Because if you're willing to run the scouting combine drills, I'm willing to show video of me falling down the stairs.
Appreciate that. Solidarity, yes.
But that's kind of how the Packers' season went. They were going at their own 9-3-1. They're leading the Denver Broncos on the road, and then they literally trip and fall and land on their faces. And so I don't know how much of that is Matt LaFleur's fault. I know there's a very loud segment, and it's not small. I don't think it's a small group. I think it's a 33% group that is just really down on him. And that certainly did not help their view. But again, if we examine the five games they lost after they were sitting there at 9-3-1 and on the verge of being up two touchdowns on the number one seed in the AFC, things obviously go to hell in a handbasket in Denver with the injuries that happened in that game. Mm-hmm. And even with Christian Watson, who plays the next week but leaves in an ambulance, not ideal. Then obviously there's no excuse for the Baltimore game a couple of weeks later. But they're leading in Chicago 16-6 at the two-minute warning. And if Romeo Doubs can just field an onside kick, that we're not looking at that game as a loss. And again, then they play the JV game that Tausch loves to tease me for covering, which, again, it was great. The girls got to go to the Mall of America, and I got to see Clayton Toon be sacrificed to the football gods. But that's not like, yes, they lost the game, but it's not like they tried and lost the game, right? They did not put forth an effort. And then, again, there's no sugarcoating how the season ends. I get that. But again, you want to talk about injuries. Edgerrin Cooper is finally having an impact in a game, and then he leaves in the third quarter, and they give up 25 fourth quarter points. And Micah Parsons is sitting in a suite with his leg elevated because he's had surgery on December 29th, and he's not able to help either. So I understand, hey, when something happens, you have to address it. And they have addressed, we're going to finish every play, we're going to run all the way to the end zone, and every drill we're going to finish competitively. That's great. But I still don't believe that translates over to what happens on game.
I tend to agree. I want to go to Gabe on this. Matt LaFleur entering year 8 as the head coach. Mm-hmm. You as a Packers fan, how do you view Matt LaFleur?
So I like Matt, and I feel like he does get beat up by the portion of the fan base Jason was referencing. When we were talking about, kind of around this and when coaches were getting fired and hired and we were going through the coaching carousel and we had Adam Schefter on, I like the way Schefty kind of phrased it. Like, if trying to figure out if you have a good coach, if your coach was fired today, how quickly would it take him to get a new job? And I think people would be lining up to hire Matt LaFleur because he is looked at, and again, I think that same portion of the fan base thinks he's a terrible play caller. That's not the fact. The people in the league look at him as a very good play caller, and they think he's one of the best at calling plays. And I know some people think, oh, he gets too conservative at the end of games. Go back and watch the second half of the Bears game. That was not a team that turtled up and was going run, run, pass, and punted away because it was 3rd and 8. Mm-hmm. They were trying to be aggressive in early downs,
despite not protecting their quarterback very well.
That's the problem. The offensive line in the second half just didn't have an answer for whatever the Bears put in front of them. They just couldn't block.
Rashid Walker wrote his contract in free agency in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason why we all thought, oh, Rashid's going to get this big-time contract. Packers getting a great compensatory pick. And then he hung out there and then signed a very underwhelming contract with the Carolina Panthers. So the offensive line underperformed. And when we get to the offensive line, I think that's an area of concern, certainly for this year for the Packers. I don't know how much of that's on Matt LaFleur, which is why whenever we have the Matt LaFleur conversation, I don't understand how him and Goody aren't just tied at the hip. Like, how are these guys just not tied together the team has underachieved the last 2 years. I feel LaFleur gets 60, 70% of that blame, and not a lot of it goes towards Brian Gutekunst.
I think more to Goody than there used to be.
Sure.
still not sufficient.
I don't know that I agree. I would say one guy traded for Micah Parsons, and that gives him a pass. I don't give him that same pass, but I think a portion of the fan base looks at Brian Gutekunst and said, hey, you made the big trade. You got rid of your beloved draft picks to bring in one of the best defensive players in football, who proved that until he went down in Denver. And I think that gives him more of a pass than LaFleur gets.
Which, again, I don't want to downplay the Micah move. It's fantastic. Matt LaFleur also developed Jordan Love to what he is.
Totally.
You remember what Jordan Love was the first game he started?
I do, very vividly.
Devontae Adams decided he didn't want to be here because of that game.
He did.
All right?
That's true.
I don't want to deal with this because there are a couple of hospital balls in Kansas City thrown his way because of that. But Jordan got better, and I give Matt LaFleur
hospital
a lot of that.
Hospital balls is good.
There are a couple, you know, I think he's gotten better, and I give Matt LaFleur a lot of that credit. But just because he was able to develop Jordan Love doesn't mean that everything else just gets to disappear. The offensive line last year is 100% on Brian Gutekunst. He decided to make some wholesale changes on that offensive line
because of the way that Philly game went.
Correct.
Overcorrecting and maybe perhaps doing it again with the kicking situation this time around.
Yeah. And so, yes, he got Micah Parsons. But that one player, this isn't the NBA where acquiring that one star is going to shoot you to the top. You got to have a well-balanced team. And there are a lot of questions around this team that have to come together because, I mean, again, you're not going to be able to have superstars at every position, right?
Sure.
It's not the way it works in the NFL. But they need to be better than what they've been at cornerback, at the offensive line position, linebacker. Like, there are positions where there have been some pretty big swings and misses over the course of time, and I'm not just going to give them a pass because I love the Micah Parsons move.
And I think Strofe makes a good point. I think before the Micah Parsons trade, you were hearing a lot more criticism of Goody. And I think that won him a lot of points with the fan base. And again, I would just caution this. And let me be very clear. I am really glad they traded for Micah Parsons. He has been great for me as a writer. He's, you know, he fills your notebook. He occasionally says things he shouldn't say out loud. As opposed to Jordan Love, who I like as a human being. But as a beat writer, he keeps it very vanilla, by design, kind of like Mike McCarthy used to say, right? But what
Mike didn't always follow that, though.
No, he did not. But what I would say about the Micah Parsons trade, and our teammates at ESPN Chicago know this, because they made the trade for Khalil Mack in 2018 when the Packers wouldn't give up both their first-round picks and the Bears did. Khalil Mack did not guarantee them a berth in the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. And while we are all excited, myself included, I still can't believe they traded for him. I really can't. And it's a great story, and it's great for all of us to talk about. Now he's going to miss 4, 5, 6. We don't know how many games he's going to miss. And you start to see, you know, some fans get a little frustrated with him, whether that's fair or not. It doesn't guarantee anything. And he could come here for 4 years and rack up double-digit sacks every season, and they could still not advance to a Super Bowl. It doesn't guarantee you anything.
I'm not in the mood for drama tonight, Jason, but how do you see the temperature in terms of the seats of Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst?
So I don't think they're like ice cold, like a delicious bubbler drink that I'm hoping to have down at their stand later.
Every year, man.
It is.
Every year without fail.
It's my favorite. I don't think the temperature is very high. But I think it would turn very quickly if they were not very good this year and it's not because of injuries. And I don't see that being the case. But I don't think contracts that you sign guarantee you much of anything other than they will have to pay you out if you're not working.
Pro Football Focus did a coaches on the hot seat list, you know, because we're at the list part of the offseason.
Sure are.
Listicle season. Yep.
But where they put Matt LaFleur, they also put Nick Sirianni on this list. It was check back in January. Because, yeah, the seat's not hot right now, but if the Packers miss the playoffs...
Yeah, they go 8-9. We're having an interesting conversation.
Unless, I'm not hoping this happens, but unless Jordan Love gets hurt, that's going to be a really hot seat miss the playoffs.
It's hard to imagine them with the roster they have, if it stays comparatively healthy,
yeah,
not being a 6-7 seed at minimum. I would also say, though, that the playoffs matter, and I'm not saying that if they play a first-round game and lose again, that he's going to lose his job. I'm not saying that, and so don't clip that, because that's not what I'm saying. But there will be a very strong reaction. And the one thing that I wasn't sure about last year, as in the wee hours of the morning, I drove back from Chicago after that playoff game, was what is Ed Policy? Who is Ed Policy, and how is he going to handle people? Now, we saw he gave the extensions, and he claimed that he had decided on that before anything happened down the stretch. If they have another season where they bottomed out at the end of the year, which I'm not predicting, does Ed Policy have a different view? That part we don't know.
If they lose another playoff game in similar fashion, I would imagine it's a high possibility.
If it's a wild card game. If it's an NFC championship game, I think you're having a different conversation.
I asked this of Tausch, and I know you're very focused on breaks because you're such a professional, so you want to get to a break.
Well, because we want to make sure we don't shortchange any positions.
Yeah, right. So, but I asked this of Tausch. Last season, let's say they hold on to win in Chicago. They would have gone to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle beat San Francisco 41-6.
Yep.
If the Green Bay Packers win the Bears game, go to Seattle and get beat 41-6. How differently are they and Matt LaFleur viewed?
I think the tenor's the exact same.
I don't. I don't think so. I think that one game, especially just who it was against, is just an albatross around his neck.
You look at 41-6 and you're just,
We had a lot of injuries.
Look at the guys they didn't have.
Sure.
They're doing with the 49ers.
Yeah,
100%.
Like it gets written off a lot quicker.
Sure.
Versus losing to who you lost to a guy who revels in beating you
with
Ben
Johnson,
and losing the way in which you did. That lingers more than...
I don't know. Like, a can of ass whooping like that is not a dish that goes down easily.
Yeah, but if it's not at the hands...
No, you're over it by halftime, man. Like, that's one of those ones where
I was in year one of Matt LaFleur, right? I think it was 2019 where they got whooped by San Fran.
Right, but
is that right?
The 49ers, yes, in the NFC Championship game, though. But, again, the 49ers had the same injury problems the Packers did.
Right.
And they got one game farther. But the reality is I think we would have been talking the same way 49ers fans talked.
Yes.
They didn't have any of their guys, et cetera, et cetera. Again, and you made a great point. Losing to – and is he going to be in these Hallmark Channel movies, or are they just partnering with him?
I hope so. I really want that to be
ammunition against him.
I'm hoping instead of practicing on Wednesday – sorry, guys, we got to cut this thing short. I got a couple more scenes I got
to
shoot.
As the guy that wanted them to be good for the storyline, the regret I have is just how douchey their head coach is.
We'll leave it at that.
I think that's a good place to end.
Thank you for taking responsibility for Ben Johnson's douchiness.
Yes, that's Wildy's fault. Jason Wildy, Gabe Knight, and Alex Grove with you. It's our annual State of the Packers show, coming off of a 23-touchdown, 6-interception season. His best yet. It's time to talk about the state of the quarterback. Go Pack, go indeed. Oh, Kyle Wallace on his wedding day?
Aren't you getting married today? What are you doing here?
20-some years.
What's happening? Wow, this is unbelievable. We're going to break. State of the quarterback is next. Let's State of the Packers. State of the Packers 2026 continues live from the Gruber Law Offices Sports Zone at Summerfest. Bears fans walking by, I assume. We just got booed. Hot start.
I don't know. Somebody was getting booed.
I think it was Strofe.
It was probably me, yeah. Who are we kidding? It was me. Alex Strofe, Gabe Neitzel, Jason Wildy with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We just did the state of the head coach. We'll get back to Matt LaFleur a little bit later in the program, probably in the 2 o'clock hour. But it's time to go position by position, and let's start with the position. It's state of the quarterback. Of course, Jordan Love, a year now into that massive contract. Really good season for him, all things considered, last year. 23 touchdown passes in the regular season, only 6 interceptions. Of course, in the playoff game, he was awesome for 3/4 of it. 4 touchdowns thrown against the Bears in that playoff game, and no turnovers for him.
I thought he was awesome for all 4 quarters.
They just couldn't get a first down in the 3rd quarter.
That wasn't him.
Well, that's true. It wasn't his fault. They just couldn't do anything offensively. Regardless, he was really, really good last year. Obviously dealt with a couple of injuries throughout, but all things considered, it seems all 3 years he's been a starter, improvement, right? Fair to say?
Very fair to say.
And I think this is a year that they are going to let it rip a little bit more, I think, with
tend to agree.
With Jordan on the list of we're going back to year one things of Matt LaFleur, to me, is kind of going back to being more of a pass-first team. I mean, again, that's easier to do when you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, right? But I think that's a situation where we're going to get back to doing some of the play action stuff that this offense is designed to do. Yeah, we'll probably have a bunch of other stuff. You know, it started, I think, with the conversation you guys had with Joe Thomas and Joe's saying, hey, I think they're doing going to go back to do more outside zone stuff. And if Josh Jacobs is uncomfortable with that, they'll figure it out.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right? So I think that they're putting the ball in Jordan Love's hands, I believe, a little bit more this year, which I think is smart because, A, it keeps Josh Jacobs fresh because he's continues to get up there in age. You don't know what you have behind Josh Jacobs, so relying more on your $50 million or $55 million a year quarterback, to me, is a smart thing.
The other piece of it, not only being smart, though, Gabe, is he's earned it. He's proven his worth in this league through 3 years as a starting quarterback. He's shown he can make the plays. He's shown he's cut way down on the turnovers and questionable decisions. Now, he still has some from time to time, just like any quarterback in the NFL. But I think he's earned that responsibility. Jason, to you, on Jordan Love, you've covered, obviously, every year of his career, but the last three as a starter. You said it's very fair to say he's improved every year. What's your outlook for 2026 on number 10?
Yeah, I think this is a pivotal year where he has to go from good. I mean, you said really, really good. I don't know how many reallys I would use. Maybe one, not two.
Really good?
But I think it's a pivotal year for him. And again, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, there's a portion of the fan base that if you're not just ranting and raving about how great he is, then you must be a hater of him. And I am in no way that. But you brought up the contract, and I understand, you know, we all say that's the cost of doing business in the NFL right now at quarterback. Well, it was the cost of doing business for the Miami Dolphins, mm-hmm. too, and they were regretting spending that money. In no way do the Packers regret paying him, but if we're going to use his contract as some sort of baseline on what we should expect from him, 23 touchdowns and 6 picks, I think we can probably expect more.
Sure.
Right? I mean, look, I'm not saying that he's Aaron Rodgers, even though many people want him to be and want us to put him in that category. But, you know, 23 touchdowns in a season for Aaron Rodgers is a disappointing season. And when he said that, I know he came off a little bit douchey. You know, some guys' career seasons are a bad season for me when Rodgers said that. But he wasn't wrong.
He was right, yeah.
And so in Jordan's case, I mean, this is a year where, you know, I think you want to see him throw 35 touchdown passes and 8 picks or whatever it ends up being. The number one thing, though, and I don't think we want to turn this into a referendum on Tyrod Taylor as the backup, but he has missed time each of the last 2 years. Now, he misses that Baltimore game and lost in the 307 rushing yards they gave up. Is that Malik Willis had 3 incompletions in that game. I mean, they did not lose because Malik Willis had a play. But again, what does it look like with Tyrod Taylor? What is Jordan Love able to start all 7 and finish all 17 games? And if he is, what does this season look like? I think it's fair to expect, because I think Jordan expects more. And that's my biggest frustration when I say these things about him and people get irritated. Like, Jordan Love expects to do more. I went to his charity event where he gave away the cleats, which is an awesome initiative that he does. And he's like, I only had 23 touchdowns. Like, we should be giving away more cleats because they're based on his touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he wants more. And I think, to your point, it is incumbent on this team and this coaching staff to say, all right, we're going to have our stud tight end, who is the best tight end in football and was leading all tight ends in receiving yardage at the time of his injury. You've got your big play wide receiver that you just signed to an extension. You've got your underrated slot wide receiver, who some people don't appreciate how good they are. And you've got your first-round pick.
My fault, the coaching staff doesn't play him.
And you have your first-round pick that you expect to elevate in year two. Give Jordan Love the opportunity to spread the ball around to those guys. You have chosen to streamline your pass-catching options. Now it's time for all of those guys to elevate.
So the reason why I brought up the contract is because in the NFL, and even though the cap keeps going up and up and up, it seems like there are a couple of different ways now to win Super Bowls, because we saw this last year with Sam Darnold. But Sam Darnold's not making top-end quarterback money.
No, he's not.
So when he's not making top-end quarterback money, you're able to go out and spend money in other places and have some different dynamic playmakers in some different spots. When you're paying your quarterback, what the Packers are paying Jordan Love, he has to play to a level where he starts elevating everybody. And I think he can do that. But I would argue at this point, and I don't mean this as an insult, he's probably been playing on the level that Sam Darnold was last year when they won the Super Bowl, which means in order to win a Super Bowl, you need to have a lot more playmakers around him. He needs to start elevating, and that's why you can't have a guy like Dontavian Wicks, and you have to say goodbye to Dontavian this offseason before he even gets to the end of his rookie deal. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the little cost-cutting measures you have to do. So Jordan has to try to elevate Bo Melton if Bo has to play, or Savion Williams if he has to play, instead of, you know, if there's an injury to Watson, Reed, or Matthew Golden. So I think Jordan can do it. That, to me, is the next step for him, where you're seeing him start to elevate people. You brought up Terry Mickens when we were having this conversation earlier this week when Homer was filling in on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. But there was a game where Terry Mickens had to play in 96 because of injuries. He had two touchdowns against the Detroit Lions. Yep. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's because Terry was ready, and a lot of it is because Brett Favre can make guys look a little bit better than they actually are. And I think that's the next step in the evolution of Jordan Love. I think we've gotten to the level of, because last year it was, okay, can you play on a consistent basis? Can you be the guy we want you to be consistently? And I think he did that for the most part last mm-hmm. year. Now the next step is, okay, now you have to start elevating the play of those around you. And I think going back to year one basics for Matt LaFleur is going to help him do that in 2026.
Well, you mentioned it. His leading receiver from last year is now in New England. There's serious questions around your leading rusher from last year and how many games he'll be eligible for, as I mentioned, Josh Jacobs. So, yeah. It's Jordan Love's offense. I think he's earned it, but also there's some other circumstances that come along with that. You're smiling ear to ear. What's going on?
I'm just glad Gabe said all those things because he'll be the one who gets clipped for saying it. That was great. I agree with everything he said, and it was very eloquently said, and I didn't have to say a word. I just stood here and smiled.
Somebody clip that. You said, Jason, something to the effect of, we're not asking him to be Aaron Rodgers, as great as that would be, because Aaron Rodgers is one of the most talented quarterbacks we've ever witnessed in the National Football
League. Yeah, Tom Brady thinks he's the best to ever do it. In terms of actual talent.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to argue against that. Nonetheless, he won four MVPs in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking Jordan Love to win four of them, but it seems like this season, a very good opportunity to at least be in the mix if he plays all 17.
Yeah, if he plays the way you expect him to, he will be in the mix. I am very eager to see how they approach things offensively. If they... Look, this offense is designed, and it's not anyone can do it. Like, when you look back on the history, the fact that Sean McVay called about Aaron Rodgers' availability after they drafted Jordan Love and went through the proper channels, and then
unlike
Kyle Shanahan went behind their back and got away with tampering, which I'm glad Matt LaFleur and Kyle kind of made up eventually, but I'm not great at forgiveness. And there was clearly something sketchy that went on there. Nothing was proven, but I just have my curiosities. But, again, the reason why both those guys pursued him was because not everyone. It's not that easy of an offense that anybody can do it. That's why Jared Goff wasn't good enough, and they went and got Matthew Stafford. It's why Trey Lance wasn't good enough, and they were fortunate that they got a guy in the seventh round as Mr. Irrelevant in Brock Purdy who was able to do it. Jordan Love is good enough for them to win with, like the Seattle Seahawks did this year with Sam Darnold. But to the point of the contract, that's not what you didn't pay him to be a guy that you win with. You paid him to be a guy that you win because of. And Aaron Rodgers was a guy that you won because of. And is Jordan Love going to elevate to be that guy? Great story if it happens. Is he capable of it? Absolutely. Is it going to happen? That's why we're here to chronicle the journey.
Well said. Quick footnote in State of the Quarterback before we get to State of the Pass Catchers coming up next. Tyrod Taylor, you mentioned him briefly. He's the new backup in town.
Not even Tyrod Taylor knows how we're supposed to say his name.
Were you asking him?
We talked to him, yes.
What did he say?
He said either one is fine.
I thought he said it was Tyrod.
You got to push back, Jason. You got to say, no, you tell me how to pronounce your name.
Believe me, I agree. But I had other things I wanted to ask him about. All right. Somebody else handled it.
So I'm going to call him Tyrod. Tyrod Taylor's the new backup in town. Obviously, Malik Willis departs. He goes to Miami.
Yes, Alex.
But I think it's nicely done. I think it's interesting from the sense of Brian Gutekunst in terms of veterans, right? When Jordan Love took over as the starter in 2023, I think a lot of us were like, oh, it'd be great to bring in a veteran backup. We know it's his team, but somebody to learn from. And they went with Sean Clifford instead. And then ultimately it was Malik Willis who backed him up the previous 2 years. Now it's a veteran, a guy that's been around the block a few times. What do you make of that signing? Of course, as a Packers fan, me and Gabe are both going to look at you and say, I hope we don't find out in the regular season, but what do you make of it?
I hope we don't find out in the postseason either.
Right.
And preseason I'm okay with, though.
And if that ends up being the case, great, because what he will then provide while not having to play is unlike anything Jordan Love has had during his career. Obviously, he had Aaron Rodgers, the savvy veteran, to teach him things, but he was the backup.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got the guy who's there whose sole purpose is to help him every week because he's the starter. And it's a different dynamic than being in the same room with Aaron Rodgers when Aaron's the starter and you're the young guy coming up. So I think it's great for him. I still think that Malik Willis to me fits the suit that you were talking about with Sam Darnold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. What the Miami Dolphins did, and they're not going to win anything this year because
no.
They don't have anybody on their team.
A lot of dead money.
At least they get the Jets twice a year.
Right, but what if they stick by Malik Willis as they build, because his contract's kind of a 2 years and then we'll see kind of a deal too, maybe even 1 year and we'll see. If you build that way, you give yourself a chance to have a chance if you spend money wisely elsewhere. And again, the Packers have two quarterback contracts on their roster. One is Jordan Love, but the other is the guy that rushes the passer. And that's a lot of money in two guys, and we'll be waiting to see how exactly they spend their other money.
Speaking of spending money, Christian Watson and Jaden Reed both with new contracts. Tucker Kraft likely up next. State of the Pass Catchers is up next. It's State of the Packers, ESPN Wisconsin. State of the Packers, live from Summerfest, continues the 2026 edition. Dance and Jason Wilde.
That's a good tune. Is that royalty free?
Sure is, yeah, sure is.
I have to put that on my playlist.
The Great Gabe Neitzel, Alex
Jason
Strope.
Jason Wilde running list. Jason Wilde royalty free running list.
Again, I always like to add
the visual that just brought to my mind, him on the treadmill.
Yeah, right?
It's got a good pace. It's got a good beat for running.
It does. By the way, we love musical artists who pour their heart and soul into their music. We're not royalty-free because we don't want to pay royalties. We have for a long time.
Well, royalty-free music is still made by people.
Well, I understand. But they're not getting any royalties from it. Otherwise, it would be...
That's true.
Right? And so, again, we blame YouTube. But I do miss...
We used to pay the... I mean, I think we still
right.
do pay
We do
the company,
still pay
yes.
it. We just don't... You can't play it on YouTube. They
yeah.
have stricter rules.
Well, there you go. There's a look behind the curtain.
I just
brought
think
to you
it's
by Jason
important.
Urban.
I don't want to look like some sort of cheapskate who doesn't want to pay people royalties.
All due respect,
musicians
I don't think...
work very hard.
All due respect, I don't think anybody thought that was your call. I know you have a lot of pull around here, but I don't...
First of all, no. I think that's been demonstrated many times. Secondly... back to the Packers.
Let's get to the Packers, and let's get to the pass catchers. State of the pass catchers. I'm grouping wide receivers and tight ends.
You skipped running backs? You went pass catchers first, huh?
We're going to go running backs next, yes.
It's out
because
of order.
We're, well, yeah, but
it's
Jordan.
Out of-
Do you want to run the show, man?
Well, I used to when it first started.
Christian Watson signs a 4-year, $110.5 million contract extension. $92
million.
Yes, you're right. What's guaranteed on that? 31?
31.
Jaden Reed, 3-year, $50.25 million. Contract extension.
$20 million guaranteed.
We assume Tucker Kraft is up next. All three of those guys will stick around as Romeo Doubs departs. He goes to New England in free agency. Dontayvion Wicks is traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. Jason, I feel like in past renditions of the show, we've kind of said the Packers view their superpower offensively as their depth at pass catcher. They've kind of veered away from that this offseason as they've
because it was never a superpower.
They believed it to be, though, right? That's fair to say?
I think
you are having a really good show. So state that for the record.
They believed it to be, sure.
They were wrong.
You can believe a lot of things.
So to go back to what Jason said earlier about the offensive line, maybe overcorrecting a little bit and going to the guys they believe in, Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, and Tucker Kraft. What should we make of this philosophy change at pass catcher? We'll start there, Jason.
I don't know. I don't. And what I've struggled with is that there is part of me, and I talked to Randall Cobb about this. I talked to James Jones about this. It's really going to be for my Channel 3000 like season preview. I'm going to focus on that. There's so many things to focus on, right? New defensive coordinator, all kinds of storylines.
Sure,
what
sure,
we just talked
sure,
about
sure.
with Jordan Love elevating to a higher plane of playing quarterback. Lots of angles. But to me, the most fascinating one about this team is less more or is less less, right? Because, I will admit I have fallen for the banana in the tailpipe. That's a Beverly Hills Cop reference.
Yep.
A few times. Like, I found Martellus Bennett to be engaging. And then he got the...
He defended Aaron Rodgers, and everybody was fired up, and
yeah.
He was great, and then he stopped showing up for work.
Yeah, then he caught a shoulder injury from standing by Aaron Rodgers with a broken collarbone, and then blamed the medical staff because he just didn't want to play. But I've fallen for a few. I fell for Andre Rison being a different person. Huge piece of the 1996
yeah.
team winning the Super Bowl, but no, that didn't really change.
He changed for...
A couple months.
As long as he needed to.
I fell for the all-for-one and one-for-all wide receiver group because it did make sense to me. And they all had different kind of specialties, right, that made them valuable. But as it turned out, you really could not keep them all happy. And then Matt LaFleur at the NFL meetings confesses publicly and unprovoked, which I still think is important to underscore, that there were guys that were disgruntled and unhappy with their roles, and I'm quoting here, that took a toll on our football team last year.
Yeah, it's not like the question was, hey, Matt, you guys have any unhappy players
right?
last year?
So I think that tells you a lot. And look, I'm not saying that was Dontayvion Wicks. I'm not saying that was Romeo Doubs. It may have been, right?
There's a history with Romeo.
It's possible, right? But, like, I don't know. There's part of me that would feel better about their wide receiver group if they had that one other guy, and it was Dontayvion Wicks. But they did get two draft picks for him, one in each of the last year's draft and this coming year's draft. So how do I quibble with that pick by that decision by Goody? I can't.
Plus, it opens up, you know, more playing time for your guy, Bo Melton.
Yes, who I think
he's fully back to being a wide receiver, right?
He is indeed. And again, as I told Chewy and Gabe earlier this week on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, he is in. I'm going to my 31st season. I have never seen a player on any team I've covered that is more beloved by his teammates than that guy. There's lots of guys that have loved lots of teammates, but it is universal with him. And I think he probably gets short shrifted as, yeah, that dude's caught some pretty big-time touchdowns.
Yeah, Bears right? at Lambeau last
Bears
year.
Bears game at Lambeau last year. The game in Minnesota when he wasn't even on the roster yet.
Those are his only two touchdowns.
No, then he had one in the playoff game.
Oh, the playoff
game. In San Francisco.
Game. Yeah, the playoff game. He's got two regular season touchdowns, yes.
But with the limited opportunities he's gotten and the fact that he was allegedly a corner, look, I don't want to spend all the pass catcher time talking about
Bo Melton.
My point is that we're going to find out if less is more or less is less.
I think less is more, though.
Like, I agree.
I hated the way that they did things. I was very vocal about it because
yes,
it just did not make sense to me. It just did not make sense to go, oh, one of these guys is going to be really good this game. We don't know which one.
Yeah.
So, and I think that affects your play calling. It affects one of Chewy's things that he has always been confused about the last couple of years is where are the bread and butter plays? And then he rattles off Fox 2 XY Hook because that was his favorite play when he was playing. And, like, we could run that play and do this.
Blast.
Yeah, you could do all these things. And I think it's hard to have bread and butter plays when you're going into a game of, oh, we're just going to ride the hot hand today. And it's going to take us a while to figure out who that hot hand is, and maybe that hot hand ends up being Dontayvion Wicks, and he makes an amazing catch on fourth down on Thanksgiving that clinches you the game in Detroit. But going into a game, having a clear hierarchy, this is our one, this is our two, and somebody can still get hot, and you can then pivot if somebody, you like a matchup or you're riding the hot hand. But not really having an idea of who your number one receiver was going to be week to week just never made sense to me. We always talk about, whenever we were talking about the Packers having all these pass catchers, oh, think about the Sports Illustrated cover, and they had all those guys. There was still a clear hierarchy with every one of those guys, and every one of them knew what their role was. And I think it's going to be easier knowing that, yes, going into a game, Christian Watson's going to play a ton. And he's going to be our number one wide receiver. And Jaden Reed's going to play a ton out of the slot. And Matthew Golden's going to be opposite of that. And then Tucker Kraft is probably going to be the guy they feature in this offense as a pass catcher. And having those roles defined, I think, makes it easier to have bread and butter plays, to keep guys happy, and have guys live up to the production we think they can live up to, because, again, we have not had a 1,000-yard receiver since Davante Adams was a Green Bay Packer. And the last year he played was 2021 in Green Bay. By the way, it's 2026.
It's been a few years. As I hear you go on and on over there, I can't help but think their identity at pass catcher was, oh, we have all these guys, but it was truly just an identity crisis. And now they seemingly have
crisis
an identity.
Is strong, but it was an undefined identity for sure.
Isn't that the definition of an identity crisis? An undefined, unidentified identity?
Maybe.
Fair enough.
It was one of those things where you hear people talk about all the depth that they have a certain position, but you don't know if any of the depth is actually good and it's just a bunch of bodies.
Yeah.
It's better than that, because as much
that
as
would
I
be a crisis.
Yeah, as much Fair. As I would rag on Romeo Doubs at times, Romeo Doubs is a pretty good wide receiver. He's not a number one wide receiver.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's just not a number one wide receiver. That's fine. You can still have a long career. Just signed a huge contract. He's not going to be the number one guy in New England.
That's why they traded for A.J. Brown.
But he's still going to have a pretty good role, I think, as a number two. And just not, again, having those defined roles makes it harder for everyone. Now, if you have injuries, that complicates things versus if you had injuries last year. But that navigating injuries is just part of the NFL. And when you have these defined roles, I think it's also easier to kind of backfill where you go, all right, now you have to step up in this role and you have to step up. And just having more defined roles is going to make life easier, I think, on everybody offensively.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Let's do this. Biggest question mark or biggest concern for the pass catcher group? Gabe, I'll start with you.
Depth. Savion Williams, he obviously the Packers like him. He was a third-round pick. That is a high investment in that position. But with some of the injuries that he had last year, he had the great catch. You know, it was a fun catch when he had the contested catch, but we just don't know what he is. And if you have any sort of injury to any of the top three, he's next in line. Is he going to be ready to go for that? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if the Packers know the answer to that right now. So that depth is, to me, the biggest question. Because I think they've got enough top-end guys, and they're paying enough top-end guys, right? But the depth is the biggest question mark.
Jason?
Paying them top end, but not paying them top end money.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, to me, the fact that they managed to keep those guys on what I will still argue is a discounted rate because of their injuries in Jaden Reed's case last year, in Christian Watson's case throughout his time, is the best thing that could have happened to them. And I know there were some that didn't like it.
The thing about, again, I'm coming from the Jaden Reed hater here, I think the Christian Watson contract seems fair. The guaranteed money was the thing that shocked me there.
Correct.
The total money for Jaden Reed was what shocked me there. Because I think he may have left. Christian doesn't think he left money on the table because he thinks he's going to go out there and earn every dollar
Correct.
Of that contract plus incentives. Jaden Reed, I think, legitimately left money on the table.
Yeah, there's no doubt he did. And one of the reasons why not only am I not a hater, but he's one of my go-to guys in the locker room, is because I'm able to walk up to him and say, did you screw this up? Like, I feel like the minute I saw the numbers, I was like, he could have gotten way more than that. And I think he's, again, there's an authenticity to him that, look, you can quibble with how they use him. You can talk about the injuries. I mean, again, I've never been called a hack to the degree that I was when I reported that he was trying to play with a Jones fracture in his foot. Because nobody does that. Well, guess what?
He did.
That's exactly what he did. And then when he had his collarbone repaired surgically, he also had the Jones fracture. So it worked out great for him. He got two for the price of one on the surgeries. But that's the kind of guy he is. Like, he's legitimately that guy. He's got a lot of Randall Cobb to him, both in terms of how they could use him and just in his attitude. And I think you need guys like that. So I think that's money well spent. I still can't believe, like, when you look at what Alec Pierce got guaranteed or Drake London got guaranteed compared to what Watson, and that was Watson's explanation to us, well, I'm going to earn all that money by playing. Great. I hope you do. But that's not how NFL contracts work. You want as much guaranteed as possible. So, again, the biggest question to me is, will less really be more? I happen to believe it will be, because I am from the school that, you know, like the Old Testament where, like, Abraham begat Isaac, that whole thing, right? Like, it was Sterling Sharp begat Robert Brooks, who begat
Antonio
Freeman, who begat Donald Driver, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams. And then when they strayed away from that, you're telling me that if he's still on that team in 2022, A, they make the playoffs even though Rodgers broke his thumb.
Yep.
And B, it allows Christian Watson or Romeo Doubs those years to develop as the two or the three. And just like Devontae Adams moved ahead of Jordy, when, and that's the one thing that I will hold against Goody forever, because his argument to me was when I said, explain to me why you couldn't keep Jordy Nelson for one more year. He would have stunted the growth of Devontae Adams because Aaron would have seen him as his number one. Well, then you haven't talked to Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, and Aaron Rodgers because everybody knew after that Dallas game. I saw a clip on social media of Devontae Adams retelling this story where they throw the third down pass in the end zone and Rodgers misfires and he comes back to the huddle and says, throw the same blanking ball. And he leaves the huddle
while
he's supposed to be calling the play.
Doesn't he say, but throw it better?
Right, but throw it better. I mean, and if you had him, then you have a different. Mm-hmm. So now I'm curious to see, with Christian Watson being in the role he is, will that work the way it used to work?
So you believe the begatting would have happened?
I do.
Is that a verb?
Yeah, it is.
Use that correctly?
It is now.
I mean, it's an Old Testament verb. Nobody's walking around Summerfest saying begat.
Well, you are.
Yeah, I'm the only one.
Okay, got it.
And, well, you did, just to quote me.
Yeah, correct. The big concern for me is health. Can Christian Watson stay healthy for all 17? What will Tucker Kraft be when he returns? Those are the two big question marks for me.
Right, I'm confident in both of those.
Good. I think Tucker Kraft is a
super question. And as shocking as it is that the dude left a game in an ambulance last year, Christian Watson played in every game he could. Mm-hmm. After he came back from the ACL,
which is
a step in the positive direction.
The one full game those two played together, by the way, in Pittsburgh was maybe the best game for the offense. Yeah.
Love threw for 360.
Sans the Bears game in the playoffs?
No, I think he was even better in that game. He 360 passing yards. Tucker Kraft 7 for 143 and 2 touchdowns. Watson 4 for 84. Like that's what your offense. That's what the image is that they have in their heads for 20.
Oh, yeah, and add in Matthew Golden, more appearances on the football field.
And more Bo Melton.
Which we can all hope for. That is your state of the pass catchers. We didn't skip it. We just moved it. State of the running backs, Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd. Who is Marshawn Lloyd? We'll talk about that coming up next. State of the Packers 2026 on ESPN Wisconsin.
Chris Brooks is upset.
State of the Packers continues live from Summerfest. Jason Wilde, Gabe Neitzel, I'm Alex Stroh. Just outside of the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone on this beautiful Saturday at Henry Meyer Festival Park. We're getting through the offense, state of the offense, and coming up next we will hit state of the running back, which is a unique one, given some off-season circumstances with Josh Jacobs, who about a month ago turned himself into police, but we haven't really heard anything since. The Brown County District Attorney has not formally pressed any charges against him in regards to a potential domestic violence case. Jason, I'm going to go to you. What's the latest with Josh Jacobs? What's the latest you've heard?
The same thing that it has been. And I think the more time goes by, it leads you to wonder what will the end game actually be and could there be nothing at all that ends up coming of this. Now, again, I think we have to be not only respectful but cautious when we talk about subjects like this. At the same time, I think the Brown County District Attorney's comments, I remember talking to you about this when it first happened, you know, they say it requires more investigation to determine whether charges will be brought, and if so, what. And I just found it to be significant, that one word, you know, I'm a stickler for words. It wasn't...
So are attorneys, so...
Indeed. Further investigation needs to be done to determine which charges will be filed. And so I don't know, but I know this. They have declined all Freedom of Information Act requests for further information, and it makes me wonder why they're doing that as well. I think it's more likely than not that this will not turn out to be something that's going to keep him out.
So fundamental question, though. Can the NFL say, hey, you were still caught up in something, even if there is no charges pressed, you're suspended for X amount of games?
Theoretically, yes, under the personal conduct policy. But again, like...
He was arrested at the end of the day.
So was Stephon Diggs, and he played the entire year last year.
God, you're having a good show.
Yeah, I'm with Jason. The more this just kind of lingers out there, and not to always read into everything, and again, trying to be as sensitive as possible. If things were as serious as we initially thought when the list of charges came out, I don't think the Packers would have had Josh Jacobs show up to any of their offseason practices that they had and be that type of distraction for the team.
Yeah, it's a really unique case. It's interesting. We don't know a ton, which is what makes it so unique, and that's why I wanted to start there. So I guess let's operate like it's business as usual for now, and obviously things
are
subject to change.
That's the phrase Matt LaFleur literally used, so yes.
Things, of course, are subject to change, but let's operate under that case. It was an under 1,000-yard season, but a 13-touchdown season last year for Josh Jacobs. Obviously dealt with some nicks and bruises throughout the end of the season, but still a very productive season for Josh Jacobs. I think this goes back to what we were talking about, Gabe, with Jordan Love, is maybe we expect a little bit less of Josh Jacobs being so heavily featured, especially early on in the season in 2026?
Yeah, maybe, because the issue with Josh Jacobs being not heavily featured, yeah, you're probably throwing the ball a little bit more, but you still want to run the ball 20 to 25 times in a game, and if you want to make Josh Jacobs last the entire season after he got nicked up last year, okay, maybe he gets 15 carries first handful of weeks. How are you divvying up those other 10? All right, maybe you give one to Jaden Reed. Maybe you come up with a creative play to Savion Williams. You give an 8 touches a game to someone who has been healthy for 6 plays in his NFL career.
Another good example. That's a third round.
You're referring to Yeet Cannon, Marshawn Lloyd. What does that mean, Yeet Cannon? That's his nickname. I don't know what it means.
Yeet. It's exuberance.
Well,
excitement.
I know the WWE version.
You're familiar with Jey Uso.
I'm not familiar with him at all, actually.
You're not familiar with his work? Okay.
He's one of the actors in WWE.
Whoa.
He's one of the performers, yes.
Performer. That's better.
One of the superstars, I believe is the actual term. So Marshawn Lloyd, to Gabe's point, 6 snaps. He was a third-round pick 2 years ago. We just don't know who he is. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's had some bad luck. He's had some soft tissue injuries. It seems like those could be solved now. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are you expecting from Marshawn?
He made it through the offseason program. There's obviously encouraging signs. Everyone knows his potential, but no one knows his production because there's been none. You know, I always go back to my Lutheran upbringing at St. Paul's, West Allis, and Martin Luther. Faith is defined as belief in things unseen. He is the epitome of having faith in a player. You don't trust him. You don't believe in him because of what you've seen. It's because what you have yet to see that you think he can do. And, again, regardless of the legal entanglement that they obviously have with their number one running back, Josh Jacobs, I didn't like where they were at running back before that happened. Because, again, and Josh Jacobs was more than nicked up. He was banged up big time last season. And while it's also the reality that, like, and we gave Jaire Alexander all kinds of grief, right? Saying that he wasn't going to play if he wasn't 100%. Well, Josh Jacobs played at, like, 60% for half the season. And what do we talk about? We talk about how he wasn't very good last year and what a drop-off there was. Well, maybe there's a reason for that. So, again, their running back situation, you know, Chris Brooks, if he was tuning into the program, would say, hey, I can handle more than what people think I can. Do you want Chris Brooks to take 27 carries like you did with Emmanuel Wilson last year against the Vikings? I'm not sure about that.
I might be the foremost Chris Brooks supporter.
He had 27 carries all of last season.
Josh DiMaggio to fight for that title.
No, we're in agreement on it, Chris Brooks. We've both been on the Chris Brooks train a long time. What he does in pass pro is really important. But do I want him carrying the ball 13 times a game? No.
No, he's really good at the role in which the Packers ask him to fill. And I look at Chris Brooks as someone where they go, oh, we know exactly what your role is. We're not looking for necessarily even growth out of that role. You're just good at this thing.
Do that.
And you're good enough to keep you around
Brandon
and be the
Jackson.
Third running backs. Yeah. Be the third running back. Do your thing. And we'll figure out what we do ahead of you on the depth chart. But to not even really bring in another option and have competition for Marshawn Lloyd was probably the most surprising thing to me this offseason.
Do you think it could still happen?
Maybe, but I don't. You know what? I'm going to say no. I don't think it would be competition. I think it would be the same way that we saw Malik Willis become the backup quarterback. I think we would get through camp, and then they go, yeah, this isn't really it, and either they make a trade or find somebody else that they think can do the job.
So they're going to give him every opportunity to prove them wrong, technically.
Look, they love
somebody's going to be proving something. I don't know who's being proven right, proven wrong, but somebody's going to be proving
that's
something.
That's true. That's right. Yeah, that's
they're going to have the opportunity to prove it.
They love Chris Brooks in his current role. They believe he can do a little bit more than what he's done. Mm-hmm. But they are clearly, whether they will say it explicitly or not, counting on a former third-round pick who has played one of a possible 36 NFL regular season and postseason games to be the guy that they drafted him to be. And if he is, this is much ado about nothing. And if he has more injury issues, then you're going to be trying to figure out what the heck you're going to do if something happens to Josh Jacobs.
It's Jordan Love's world, and we're all just living in it. But in order to live in Jordan Love's world, he needs to stay upright. And that's why I'm very excited for this next conversation. The state of the Packers' offensive line.
How much time do we have?
Giddy up! We talk about the offensive line coming up next. State of the Packers 2026, live from Summerfest on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.